as of recently, like, I don't really care to buy real estate. I think there's better things to pour value into, like Bitcoin and a local business who's going to serve people. If you use an SBA loan, you might be able to put 5 to 10% down to buying a business, which could be under 100K in some instances, or even no money down if you can find the right seller. By building this business, is you're creating more cash flow for yourself so you can accelerate and buy Bitcoin now still, but buy way more into the future. You can also put Bitcoin on your balance sheet for your business. If it's over a million, the risk of it defaulting when using an SBA loan is less than 2%. So 98% of them make it, and you have to ask yourself why.
This podcast is entertainment, not financial, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed represent statements of the speaker in their individual capacity, do not represent the views of Unchained, and should not be considered investment advice. Speakers often have personal, family, or business connections to Unchained, which may include direct financial benefits. Please see our disclosure at unchained.com/podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bitcoin Frontier podcast. This week I have on Bobby Shell. Bobby, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you on. For those that may have not heard you on a podcast before, what's your background and what's your experience in Bitcoin?
Yeah. So my background, I've grown up doing business and marketing and sales my whole life. And for the last 13 or so years, I've spent a lot of time working directly with small businesses and built an appreciation and an understanding of Bitcoin during that time. And right near the middle part of COVID, I was just like, I got to break out of my job and work for a Bitcoin company. So I started looking for a place to work, and that's where I work now, as a Voltage. For those who don't know, I'm the VP of marketing there, and I've been there just over 2 years now, having a blast doing that. And just before joining Voltage, I worked at a digital marketing agency that served SMBs, did that for about 11 years. And a month before I joined Voltage, I co-founded a digital marketing agency that serves small to medium-sized businesses and e-commerce businesses. And still running this day, our CEO, Alex Wells, does a really good job running that business. It's been thriving. And just understanding Bitcoin and small businesses, I'm starting to see how the two overlap. And there's so much that I think that we can discuss today. And I'm excited to be here to talk about it.
Yeah, 100%. I'm curious, can you kind of describe like your day-to-day within Voltage and then also within your marketing agency that you work on?
Yeah, so at the marketing agency, I don't really do too much day-to-day. I just kind of tweet about it, the overlap, you know. But as far as Voltage, it's different from working at an agency prior where you have a big team. I managed a team of 40 people and you got to delegate and kind of orchestrate. It's different at a startup. You're typically like a one or two person team. You kind of have to wear all the hats. So you go from, having experts in every field to now you kind of have to be decent at like quite a few of them. So it's like definitely a learning curve for, I think, anyone in that position. But day to day, it's a lot of, working on social content, email marketing, some go-to-market strategy. We have some, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but we're launching some new stuff at Voltage in the next couple of weeks, which is pretty exciting. And just building the brand, building funnels, and working on attracting new customers for the business.
I love it. Yeah, I know you have this idea of two major wealth transfers occurring right now. Can you elaborate big picture on what you see there?
Yeah, so everyone knows the Bitcoin wealth transfer. I think a lot of us talk about that a lot. But another major one that's happening is there's 10,000 baby boomers every day retiring, and they own about $7 to $10 trillion worth of businesses. And 70% of these businesses go unsold, meaning they're just going to shut their doors. And there's a major opportunity to acquire these businesses leveraging SBA loans and these incentives that our government gives us to stimulate the economy. You know, 99% of businesses are small businesses, meaning under 500 employees. And with boomers retiring and all of this wealth and small businesses that they own, there's a good reason for people to acquire them. And all that being said, It's been a thing since like the 80s where folks will go to school, get an MBA, learn about operations and acquisition entrepreneurship is the formal name. And nowadays with the internet and thanks to, you know, content creators like Cody Sanchez and others, there's now this, esoteric knowledge of business acquisitions is now available to the layman's person. And that's incredible. And why I think it's important and why I think the overlap with Bitcoin is so significant is typically Bitcoiners are very principled. They have values. And when you go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, you start to understand a lot of things of how the world operates and what incentives drive action. And small business ownership, typically the small business owners in the community are the folks who hold the most wealth. Typically, these people are making anywhere from, you know, 300,000 to 5 million yearly, like take home. And when you grow a small business and you scale it over time, you can exit and sell it for a lot of money. And there's this thing happening right now where private equity is slowly absorbing all of the quality assets in the world. And I think for those who have the entrepreneurial spirit and for those who like to step out on their risk curve, whether that be holding Bitcoin or going to make a brand and build something, there's an overlap. And I want Bitcoiners to understand that, but I also want small business owners who are trying to dip their toe into Bitcoin to have resources online and good quality networks of people they can connect with and meet. So yeah, I'll pause there.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because when I think about entrepreneurship, I've always, at least historically, I've thought about like early stage, high growth tech startup, whereas there might be a less risky, you know, lower or maybe not massive $1 billion reward, but more sustainable and likely reward of buying or starting a actual small business in your community. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think our world does glamorize tech. Like me and you are both young guys. So we've kind of seen the rise of like venture capital and like making big bets and seeing like companies go to like $1 trillion market caps. But you're 100% right. Like in our local communities, the people who have the most wealth are those who provide like home services or serve locally. And it is far less risky. You know, you don't have to go have this like big, bold idea that, you know, may or may not solve this global problem. You know, someone's pipe is busted right now. We don't have enough workers in America who can do plumbing. We don't have enough workers in America who can do these common home services. And what's unique is trade schools were like at a pretty low point where trade schools are not having enough folks apply. And where I live in South Carolina, they're allowing people to go to trade school for free with zero tuition to fill this gap. So there's incentives in place to kind of swing the pendulum back from like big tech, you know, like these debt based, like give up a ton of your company to receive, you know, cash and give someone else the equity, where you can potentially start a business in your local neighborhood and change your local economy. So yeah.
Yeah. So is your view that people that hold Bitcoin could theoretically tap into like cheap government debt and acquire these businesses? Or how would you, like if someone out there is looking to acquire an SMB, how would they go about doing it the correct way in your view?
Yeah, there's a great community on Twitter or X for SMB entrepreneurs, but the SBA program is in place to help individuals start a business. And it used to be that you'd go to the bank and you would pitch your idea and they would fund it, you know, like kind of look at it, hey, we believe you have the skills or you don't. Nowadays, the one risk, which I think kind of puts a lot of people on their heels, is you have to pledge sometimes your own assets, like your home or your net worth, and then they'll give you the loan. So the bank isn't necessarily lending on the viability of the business. They're lending on the viability of you as a person. Like if you go tits up, can you cover and help us like recover? So that's one thing that shifted. So yeah, I mean, but the thing is like the opposite side, you know, cause everyone likes to either share fear or like, you know, there's all this unlimited opportunity with no risk. While you do take on some risk, the other side is, and the story is, businesses that make it over $1 million in revenue, which, you know, very, very few do that, you know, 95% of businesses or so don't really go that far. If you make it over $1 million in revenue, it's typically considered attractive. And there's a ton of businesses right now below $1 million in revenue that a lot of people are not buying because it takes a lot of work to get it to $1 million. But you know, if it's over $1 million, the risk of it defaulting when using an SBA loan is less than 2%. So 98% of them make it. And you have to ask yourself why. Well, the reason why is once you're over $1 million in revenue, you typically have like systems, processes, things in place where when you acquire it, you're acquiring a functioning, successful business that has made it past this line in the sand where majority of people fail. And typically, if you're going to acquire a business, you're either, you understand operations, you understand leadership and people, marketing, sales, you're going to bring something to the table. And when you buy that business, you're trying to identify where are the weaknesses or where are the areas where my skill set can take it to another level. And one last thing I'll say, because I met with an SBA lender last week, he said, everyone wants to buy a business over $1 million. And there's tons of businesses for sale in like that 300 to 400, 700K range that no one is buying. So someone out there who, you know, maybe has like 5 years of operations experience and they're a digital marketing expert like me, they might be like, well, hot dog, let's buy that business. It's like 600 or 700K because I could double it within a year with my base level knowledge. So those are two kind of key points, but wanted to share a little on like the upside, but also the risk that you know, is posed by taking this approach.
What would be examples of companies or small businesses that might be in that lower than $1 million in revenue range? And like, what would be like the profit or the net income that you would receive if you're buying a company for, say, like $500,000?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. Often a lot of these smaller companies, it's like a solo owner. So, you know, it's like key man risk, where if you buy it, that person could go MIA and leave you hanging. You're like, oh, I got to figure all this out. So that's one thing. And a lot of these companies, they may have like really bad financial tracking. They may have not tracked their numbers well. And beyond that, like if they don't have any employees at all, like you don't have anyone that you can also lean on, like that's again, that key man risk. But there are companies, you know, that are smaller that have one or two employees. We've had a few in my past career where they're under $1 million. They might have like two guys, you know, one truck, two trucks at most, but there's just a lot more risk. And as far as like take home, like profit wise, I mean, it could be anywhere from, you know, 30% to like 60%. One of the more profitable verticals, if you will, of like small business that a lot of private equity really loves is like HVAC and plumbing, because the margins are so high. And it's not to say it's like the only thing that's attractive, because there's things like, you know, cleaning, like inside of the home cleaning services, there's window cleaning, there's pressure washing, there's a lot of other verticals where you could run a 1-3 man team and make an incredible living, like better than most people. It just takes time to ramp up.
Yeah, it does somewhat appeal to me to like try to, you know, create a product or service or buy a product or service functioning small business that provides like a real value to the community. Mm-hmm. But how do you reconcile, you know, obviously we see there's massive upside in just holding spot Bitcoin rather than, you know, out here investing in the S&P 500 or small, medium businesses. How do you reconcile those two and like pick which one to do, or can they both overlap or intertwine?
Yeah. So let's start with like why you may not do it. You may be making, you know, 150, 200, 300K, whatever, and you love your job and you could just buy a ton of Bitcoin. Like, why would you leave that life of luxury? There's some people who may make, let's say on the lower end, 150, and they're just like, my job's driving me crazy. I'm buying Bitcoin, but I want to like leave and I want to create upside for myself. If you use an SBA loan, you might be able to put 5 to 10% down to buying a business, which could be under 100K in some instances, or even no money down if you can find the right seller. And then now by building this business, you're creating more cash flow for yourself so you can accelerate and buy Bitcoin now still, but buy way more into the future. You can also put Bitcoin on your balance sheet for your business. Now, the other side is, I know some folks, they think of it in the one-dimensional way where if I buy a business, I'm not buying any Bitcoin at all. And I would say that's totally not true, because one thing about taking, like, let's say you had 50 grand or 100 grand, you wanted to go buy Bitcoin today. You're going to buy, let's just call it two coins to make math simple. Even if you believe Bitcoin over the next 10 years is going to be $1 million a coin, that's $2 million. If you can spend 100 grand on a business today, grow it, and you believe in yourself of being someone who can grow it. You know, if you have no experience, there's no way in hell you should probably be going to do this. You should do your research and learn some skills. But if you're just like betting on Bitcoin and not yourself, there's a couple of things there. One, by growing your business and scaling it and increasing the revenue, it sells at a higher multiple. So you might buy a business today at like 2, 3, 4 times revenue. If you can multiply that business and grow it, you might sell it at 6 to 8 times revenue, all while taking home a much bigger paycheck. So at the end of the day, just like with anything, you know, run the numbers, as we love to say, you need to understand like simple financial models of like forecasting. And if you can do that, you can weigh the risk for yourself. But the even more important thing, like a lot of Bitcoiners that like you're in it for 4 or 5 years and you're down this rabbit hole, you start really thinking about the future, your children, like what incentives motivate people.
With tax day on April 15th, high net worth Bitcoin holders could be leaving a lot of money on the table if they don't have a sound financial plan and tax strategy. Sound Advisory is a leading financial advisory firm for long-term Bitcoin holders like yourself. They can help you maximize your Bitcoin wealth while navigating the complexities of the legacy financial system. Don't get killed on taxes. Check out Sound Advisory at thesoundadvisory.com for more information. That's thesoundadvisory.com. Now back to the show.
And the biggest thing you can do for your local community is be an entrepreneur, add actual value, and then influence your local community to become a hub of what you believe is going to better serve our children and our world. So there's a lot of upside to that. And it's not to say you cannot do it without Bitcoin, but this whole like, oh, don't do it because you can just buy Bitcoin. It's like that person may not be an entrepreneur and that's okay. But if you have the entrepreneurial spirit and you know how to like weigh the pros and cons and you can see the upside and you believe you can create it, by all means, you should do it. Because at the end of the day, Bitcoin and money solves the coincidence of wants. And the only reason we have Bitcoin and money in the first place is because people want to trade products and services. So if you put money ahead of products and services, you have it backwards. The only reason we have this thing is because people trade products and services. So if you put the money ahead of the reason we have money, I think those people maybe have lost the plot.
Yeah, you brought up the opportunity to get an SBA loan. Can you dive deeper into that idea? Because to me, thinking about this from a very big picture perspective, I wouldn't necessarily, at least for me personally, I would necessarily want to spend, you know, 100% and buy an entire small medium business without any leverage. To me, the attractive part is using leverage at like a government subsidized rate. So can you like dive into that idea and how that would work?
Yeah, I'm by no means an expert of the SBA program, but you can really think of it like when you go to buy a home, you know, like you put a percentage down and then when you go and get the loan, you can just see, hey, what's the debt service? Like, am I going to pay, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% for this loan? And you can look at the cash flows of the business and just see, can I service it? And how much will I take home? You know, how much will I make? And can I service this debt and have a better lifestyle? And a lot of folks that go into looking to acquire a business, it can take up to 2 years to find one, like very easily. Like, you want to have money set aside because when you go to find one, it takes a very long time to find one. Like a lot of things can go bad in the process of going to acquire one. So typically you want to have savings, but that's really the gist of it. It's kind of like the easiest comparable is buying a home. And this is also why I think an important caveat, like 70% or so of these businesses won't sell. They will just shut down. This is also an opportunity for those who are like, hey, I don't want to use leverage. I don't want to go into debt. You can actually start a business pretty easily and you know, work on it on the weekend, do it after hours, provide service for friends and family, maybe for free for a few months, get yourself 8 to 10 Google My Business reviews, which is the review platform we all use to look up restaurant reviews. Like when you go to call a plumber or HVAC guy, you kind of look at their reviews. You can do that yourself. And then once you have some reviews, you could then consider, you know, getting your EIN, setting up your website, doing all these other things. And I'll have to tell you, so many of these like one guy, two guy teams over the last like 13 years that I marketed, they did exactly that. Like they would, they wouldn't immediately go build a website, buy a truck, get their EIN, set up a bank account. They would begin doing some jobs for free for friends and family, getting reviews, and then pay the $100 to start your LLC, get a business bank account, and now start selling services to people you don't know. And this is a very low cost way to start a business. Because think of it this way, if 70% of these businesses don't fail and there's less of us than there were boomers, there's going to be a huge gap in the market that needs to be filled. And those who proactively do that today and work on nights and weekends and still you do your W-2, you're going to eventually fill that gap when these people exit over the next 7 to 10 years. So, you know, gradually, then suddenly, you don't have to go all in and, you know, use a ton of leverage. Like there's very good ways you can approach it intentionally and slower and still find success.
From like a marketer's perspective, as you are, like what's a good, you know, SMB to try to start or try to acquire? Like what segment?
I think if you like people who are good with their hands, like even if you didn't go to a trade school, like I have tons of friends who just worked with their dad growing up. And maybe it's like woodworking or home contracting, remodel and repair. Like, I have so many friends who have done that. In my last agency, one of the best clients that you could have was a roofing company, because they spend so much on paid ads, especially when a storm comes by. Like, those guys will spend, you know, 100, 200 grand a month, because when you got a hole in your roof, you have to fix it, you know? And if you can be first and get the phone call, you're going to make a ton of money because insurance pays for it. So I've met tons of people who've gone into roofing because it's such a lucrative business. But let's say you don't have those skills, right? Like, you're an average person and you're like, I don't know all these home service things. Well, what can you do? Cleaning is one thing. You can clean homes. Like, that's something our parents had us do when we were kids, you know, like, clean the house. That's a great place to start. It's a low level barrier entry. And I'll tell you this, like, home cleaning companies, most of them are so bad and so lazy. My parents have like a rental or two. They've been through like 15 cleaning companies in the last like 3 years. Like, it's impossible to find good people. So it's very easy to charge a little bit of a premium there and deliver delightful service. The other thing is pressure washing is another low cost one. You can get a machine for $1,000, get your feet wet, learn. And pressure washing a house, even if you just do your own, it can be $500 to $800. So just by doing a couple of those jobs, you've already made your money back. But those are some straightforward, kind of simple examples of just how to get your feet wet and kind of learn the ropes.
Yeah, very interesting. Tying it, like, you brought up private equity firms going in and acquiring a lot of these small, medium businesses, maybe mm-hmm. like HVAC companies or plumbers or whatnot. Is that detrimental to local communities? Like, is that a bad thing that these, you know, larger Wall Street type firms are coming in and acquiring these in local communities with, you know, at a size of many, many millions and even billions of dollars?
I'm glad you brought this up, because RFK Jr. had a woman on his podcast the other day. Do you see that? Okay. No? Okay. So it's pretty interesting. This guy, Chris Hoffman on Twitter, he owns a family-owned HVAC company. They're like $140 million in revenue. And his thing is, we're not going to sell our to PE. We're going to own it and grow it forever. And we're going to build the best HVAC services company. So that's cool. Like, he's doing it, I think, in a really great way. But on the RFK podcast, this woman was talking about how, like, PE firms, they'll roll up and buy. And roll up means, like, once you buy one and you're functioning, you can just roll other companies up under yours. And that's how you can go from, like, selling it like a 6x multiple. And you just grow it from, like, you know, whatever, 8, 10 million in revenue to like 40, 50 million in revenue.
In this frontier moment, Bobby is talking about large private equity companies acquiring a number of small local businesses and rolling them up into one entity. Under a Bitcoin standard, the landscape of private equity rollups would likely see a significant transformation due to the fundamental differences in how capital would be accessed and used to build companies. Rollups, a strategy to consolidate operations and increase value, traditionally rely heavily on cheap debt financing. This accessibility to low-cost capital is a cornerstone of many private equity transactions, enabling firms to leverage their acquisitions, boost returns, and reduce initial equity requirements. A shift to a Bitcoin standard could have massive implications for this strategy. With less incentive and ability to engage in aggressive, highly leveraged consolidation strategies, we might see a deceleration in global business consolidation trends. This environment could foster more localized entrepreneurship, as smaller businesses would face less pressure from large consolidated competitors. It may encourage a more vibrant local business ecosystem where innovation and competition thrive without the overshadowing presence of large, inefficient, highly leveraged corporations. And now back to Bobby.
You can sell it for a 20x multiple. And for those who aren't like into business, the layman's is like, the more sustainable and established a business is, the less likely it is to fail. And like, it sells at a higher multiple for people with lots of capital who want to allocate it. They're like, some PE firms are like, we don't buy anything unless it's a $50 million check or more. So that's why they want to buy like large sustainable businesses. But in these communities, they may buy up like 5 to 7 brands, and they buy the likeness and the name of the family. So the website still says, you know, local small business with the family name, but it's not owned by them. It's owned by a PE company. And the prices are like overnight, you know, 2x or something. And it's like, oh yeah, call competitors. And then you call competitors and all the prices are up. And people are like, I can't afford this. So again, to like the principles and values of Bitcoiners, learning these skills and like providing a local service that can really serve people is more meaningful than ever. But yeah, you know, private equity is not bad. You know, at the end of the day, like if there's a problem or arbitrage, like in a in an area, that's what entrepreneurship is. You take advantage of it, solve the problem. But the fact that the money's broken, you know, money is chasing anything and everything of yield, and the incentives are slowly like breaking over time, and it just hurts the end consumer. So, you know, good and bad.
Yeah. Tying it back to Bitcoin, like, I think one of the reasons why, again, everyone wants to hold Bitcoin right now because that's the main wealth transfer that we're all interested in. Like, we discovered a new form of money. It's far superior. It's worth a lot more than $50,000 or whatever it's trading today. And so people are just kind of sitting on their hands holding Bitcoin. I feel like, and let me know if you agree or disagree with this, that as Bitcoin becomes adopted and maybe Bitcoin reaches gold parity or, you know, obviously significantly higher, but starting there, maybe then when the upside potential is significantly less, we're going to see a lot more entrepreneurship from early Bitcoiners, because then they're like, okay, now I'm sitting on this newfound wealth. I can keep holding Bitcoin, but the returns aren't going to be, you know, a CAGR of 50% just sitting on cold storage Bitcoin. Maybe it'll be down to 10% or 20% or whatever. Like Saylor says, the 14% as his like long-term return. Is that when, you know, once the return is less, the expected future return is less, is that when people are going to go out there and acquire all these SMBs or invest in startups?
Yeah. I think people who are entrepreneurs and like the risk and like owning a business, like there's people who, like, I know a guy on Twitter, he acquired an HVAC company, and he's since acquiring it a year and a half ago, it's grown 160%. So that guy is destroying Bitcoiners, you know, but are you the type of person who can do that? You really have to ask yourself that question. But to your first point, when the price goes up to 500K, will more people step into entrepreneurship? I believe yes. And there's two reasons. One, whenever that much value is locked in Bitcoin and it's not moving, the government will likely offer tax incentives. You know, it's just like with real estate, like they have these incentives like bonus depreciation, cost segregation studies, so that these people who are taking risks can reduce their tax consequence and continue more investment now into the future. Same thing with the 1031 exchange. Whenever you sell an asset and you roll it into another one, it frees capital up so that now that, you know, you've lived in this for a while or you improved it, whatever your story is, you now can like move into another asset and do it again. Like, this is how the government gets money to move in tax efficient ways. The same thing is going to come to Bitcoin. They're going to see that these like just normal everyday people or rich, regardless, have so much wealth locked up. They're going to say, hey, when you go to spend it, no taxes. When you go invest in small businesses, no taxes. When you go to do whatever, and they're going to give people an incentive to get rid of it. And the other thing, I think over this time frame, a lot of folks, like over the next 10 years, they're going to continue trying to level up their job, their skills, and they're going to build skill sets that make them more likely to be an entrepreneur. Like every day, like if you're not growing your skills, there's people in other parts of the world that are going to replace you for a much lower cost. Like, there are so many people in other countries that are way better workers than a lot of people I've worked with in America. And it's pretty neck breaking. It's happening. And I think a lot of folks are going to be very intentional to build new skill sets. And after doing so, and after getting price appreciation in Bitcoin, they're going to say, I can do this. You know, I can be an entrepreneur. And they're going to take that leap. So I'm with you 100% on that, man. It's totally going to happen.
Yeah. Do you think that new technology and things like AI can create opportunities or create disruption, especially like in the SMB world? Like, I think of people, again, going back to what I brought up earlier, is like everyone thinks that being an entrepreneur or starting a company is all about like creating the next big tech startup. Whereas maybe like AI and new technology or something else can revolutionize a part of the SMB world, and that could create opportunity there. And you know, a space that's, you know, a little lower risk than trying to build the next Facebook or whatnot.
Yeah. I totally think AI can. It's hard to find the right answer because everyone thought AI would replace blue collar, and it's not, you know, it's replacing the tech guy. But I think some things that will come from it, like better customer support, like as AIs are specially trained for like very unique instances, it can be used for customer support. It can be used for training, you know, training employees on the field. It can be very helpful. It can also be leveraged for operational excellence. Like, one thing is consistency of customer experience, and being able to extend that to people is going to be really important. But it's hard to say like what AI will exactly do. But I think one thing's certain, it's going to touch SMB jobs, and like those people last, like the trade jobs, they'll end up making more overtime because there's a shortage of them. But AI is definitely going to be a tool for marketers, salespeople, and operation pros who want to better manage their finance, their inbound leads, and the sales process to close people faster. So I think it'll be used in those ways versus the actual trade of executing on the job.
Yeah, that makes sense. Until we get some like crazy robotics combined with AI, it might be a while until the blue collar side of, you know, SMBs or work in general gets truly automated. Eventually it'll happen, maybe. Do you think that this concept of like Bitcoiners accumulating a lot of wealth and SMBs getting sold to, you know, Bitcoiners or at least non-private equity firms, large private equity firms, does that make communities or local communities more free or more sovereign? Like in the sense of, hey, if Wall Street comes in and buys all these HVAC companies, then they're kind of at the mercy of Wall Street and whatever prices they want to do and whatever games they want to play if they own all the HVAC companies in one community. Whereas if all the Bitcoin holders or like some local Bitcoiners own, you know, a couple HVAC companies in one community, maybe that community would be more free and more competitive.
That's a really good question, man. Yeah. I mean, I think it would be better for it not to be owned by like PE groups who are like out of state. Like there's something about being in the heart of your community, being there, like, and just being present. Like one thing, for instance, in Colorado, in this one town that I moved out of, they kicked out every single conservative, basically, and they're trying to do everything they can to hinder and stop any growth at all. And it's pretty bad because they're not adding any affordable housing. They're not letting any new businesses be built up and a lot of other things. And hearing people on the inside and some people who kind of recently lost their jobs, it's pretty bad. And you think about stuff like that, like it's very easy to kind of be laid back and be like, I don't like politics, blah, blah, blah. I used to be that guy. And now I'm at a point in life of maturity where I'm just like, sticking your head in the sand and doing nothing is zero value to the world. Like it's cool to be like chill and laid back, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, there's always someone out there trying to reach for more power for themselves and for their friends. You know, like, well, show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. And these shifts are happening, and it's just very important for us to be intentional about being present at these conversations, holding people accountable, and using a better form of money. And the way we hold these people accountable is by using a better form of money, building these parallel systems and businesses. Like you said, like if Bitcoiners like bought a bunch of businesses in an area, would that be better? Like, absolutely, just because they're not incentivized by these like huge profit margins and just needing to like serve themselves first over the customer. And it's just going to bring more rationality to the world. And I used to work in private equity, and one of the guys I knew that was like out on the field, like buying multifamily apartments, you know, if we don't fix a lot of these apartments from the 70s and 80s, they're going to collapse and go down. Like they're just not going to survive, and we're going to even have less housing. So it's totally necessary to go find them and rehab them. But the painful thing is there was like this little Spanish mother who was on the property, and she was like, you're not one of those rich guys who's going to come in and, you know, redo our cabinets and the counters and move the rents up $500, are you? And when you hear someone say that, you're kind of like, am I really doing the right thing? Like, do I feel good about this? You know? And I was just like, there's better stuff I can do other than like flipping real estate. And as of recently, like, I don't really care to buy real estate, you know, unless it's like family home or something, you know, I don't really want to invest in that anymore. I think there's better things to pour value into like Bitcoin and a local business who's going to serve people. But I'm not there yet either with like owning a small business, but I want people to know it and understand it, because seeing all these stories of people from the last like 10, 12 years of marketing these small businesses, and I never heard of acquisition entrepreneurship during that 12 years. And I manage millions of dollars monthly. I manage 40 employees. We probably have 200 plus active accounts within that team. Never heard of it once. Never heard that term, which I thought was interesting. And now that information's out, and if you listen to Cody Sanchez, she's becoming more vocal about this. And she's one of the biggest people on the internet who talks about acquisition entrepreneurship. Her whole value proposition and story she tells people is, money is made on Main Street, not on Wall Street, and private equity is going to buy up all these, and I want the little guy to have some. You know, she's not taking like the same approach as I'm taking talking through you to you about it, but she's like, we need this in the hands of the people. And she's basically saying the same thing through a different lens. But here I'm trying to speak directly to Bitcoiners. But it's interesting, you know, if we want to create a great future for our kids and our specifically our local communities, we have to do it in this way. And the most fascinating thing, I'll say this and pause again, is in America, we've got two of the greatest freedoms on planet Earth. We have states' rights, which is great. And, you know, we're seeing states adopt Bitcoin mining. And just on the 7th, the Senate like subcommittee is voting and standing up against CBDCs on the anti side, and they're defending that right in our state. That's one reason why we moved here, as I don't want to be in a state where they like, you know, teach kids like dirty sexual things in school or infringe on our local rights. But we've got the right to move with our feet to a local state, and we have the right to choose what money we want. People are defending that with mining and allowing people to hold Bitcoin. So the fact that we can do that and we can serve our local community should get everyone so fired up. Like, you should be feeling a flame in your chest right now. Like, this is the coolest opportunity in the world, and I want people to know about it, man. It's incredible. It's such a blessing that we have both of those options in America.
Yeah. Another point that came to mind when you were talking was, if you're out there, you know, acquiring, you know, a local HVAC company, and your objective is to start with one and maybe like get a couple or a few, versus the private equity firm that may have acquired like 100, maybe you as the local can provide or can extract like more alpha, more like economic alpha or more return, because you know the local market and like the local culture and the local people a lot better than the private equity firm. And so maybe that the market actually becomes more efficient because it's more of like a smaller nodes are like acting on the market, rather than we have like one big large node that's kind of like coming into everywhere all over the US and kind of doing the same thing just to, you know, acquire more and increase their revenue and get the higher revenue multiple and then pass the bag on to somebody else.
Dude, you're spot on. And at the end of the day, everything comes down to storytelling. Like, some people hate sales, some people hate marketing, you know, some people just hate working. Like, we're in 2024, a lot of people just don't want to work, but it always comes down to story, and you're spot on, because as a local business owner, even though the PE groups bought the name and the rights to like keep telling the story in the same way, it's not the same. And this is why marketing is more important than ever, because if you are a local owner and you can be present, you can shake hands, you can kiss babies, you can make the video content, and you can show people that you are truly local and you can care about them, people resonate with that. And one thing that whenever I talked to Mark Moss about this last year at like the Wyoming retreat at Jackson Hole or whatever, I was telling him about acquiring SMBs, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I was sharing it with everyone there. And he was like, oh, I love this topic. He was like, Cody Sanchez is one of my good friends. But he was like, what I believe in more is values-based businesses. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was talking about how Ben Shapiro, I think one of his sponsors was that razor company. I forget the name of them. Either way, he said there were two genders, and they were like, we're going to cut off your sponsorship. And he was like, better yet, you're fired. I quit. I'm going to go work with, I think it's like Jeremy's Razors is the name. Have you heard this story?
I have not. Not yet. No.
Okay. So Jeremy's Razors. Yeah. their marketing, it says, stop giving your money to woke people. Like, the pop-up on their website says, keep it woke free, or free leftist tears tumbler on all orders over $100. But their whole value proposition is stop giving the money to people who hate you and that don't value you. And their sales went parabolic, because over 55% of people don't want the woke agenda, where all this like dirty stuff's happening in the world. And his whole point was, values-based businesses who are going to plant their flag in what they believe in and do it, they're going to win. And we're seeing businesses do that today. And while a small business isn't, you know, picking left and right and like fighting politically, people feel that. And if you locally can like showcase principles, values, and just have character versus like this ethereal, like, we're a local family-owned company, like, that's going to speak to people more. And even more importantly, if you're not an SMB person and you have thoughts or beliefs about what ingredients should be in food, what are your political beliefs? Like, are you a Christian or not? All of these things. And there's many, many more. by planting your flag in that ground and speaking up, there are people out there online who are very quiet. They never talk about their faith and fear of being canceled at their job because they have all these DEI initiatives and stuff. If they see you do that, they believe in you. And trust me, those people slide into your DMs like crazy. And they're just like, hey, keep it up, man. I really love what you're saying. I have people do that all the time to me because I'm bold. You know, I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. And I believe that we should have the freedom of speech like the law has given us. Like that's a God-given right. And there are people out there who want to give money to those entrepreneurs who have values because the world's broken. The money is broken. The incentives are broken. And we're kind of swinging back to some level of middle ground, you know, where people can be people again. And we're not just like canceling each other just for being a little bit different. So
do you think Bitcoin is playing a role in bringing the cancel culture down and maybe more empowering the individual and like disempowering the large corporation or big government in general?
Yeah, it definitely helps people in tough situations. Like we saw the truckers and people escaping like these countries that are under, you know, like authoritarian control or whatever. I don't know all of those stories, but you know, you hear them. But I think too, like the thing about it is, I love how Jack Mallers is saying this now because I've been thinking and feeling this for a while, but like the more you support fiat and the more you use it and the more you save in it, the more you're supporting basically going to war and murdering women and children, you know? And we luckily have a new form of money that really isn't gambling. Like it really is something that gives everyone an equal playing field. You know, it doesn't mean an equal outcome, you know, because at the end of the day, the person who takes the risk, the entrepreneur, is the person who makes the most money. Like getting mad at someone for creating all this value in society is, I think, the wrong stance. I think the stance where we need to direct that anger is upstream to our leadership who tries to interfere and get their hand in everything versus allowing people freedom and free rights. So I think, yes, it does give people an opportunity to create a better future for themselves and protect their time. And whenever you do that, it gives your mind a sense of mental rest and ease. Like I'm sure you felt this being a Bitcoiner, where when you save in a better form of money and you're not subjected to all of the brokenness of this world, you have a bit more peace and clarity and you have the ability to focus and create more value and just do a better job for the company you're a steward for, the family you're a steward for, or even the people in your neighborhood that, you know, we're meant to be stewards to their needs. So I don't know if that's like the exact answer, but yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, it's a good point. Going back to like, you know, local businesses and then also having the peace of mind holding Bitcoin. I've always thought that it's interesting. Like when you don't have Bitcoin, you literally hold your wealth in entities that like are kind of outside of you. Like it's your bank that's not really in your local community, or you hold a bunch of stocks that aren't really, you know, related to you directly in your local community. Whereas like with Bitcoin, like you're literally holding the keys to your wealth and you have it with you locally, you know, and that's kind of like, it's kind of empowering the individual and disempowering large entities outside of you. And it's kind of, it does bring you that peace of mind where it's like, now I'm not reliant on those large entities to just make sure I have access to my wealth. Like I hold my wealth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's spot on. And I know a lot of detractors will be like, it's volatile, blah, blah, blah. And it's like we always say, just don't go all in if you're worried about it. You know, get started, get off zero, slowly dollar cost average in, learn more. As you get conviction, as you build skills, as you increase your income, as you create more value, you can allocate more money to it and you can protect yourself even more and create more upside. But yeah, you're spot on.
Tying this all back to SMBs, do you think it's interesting in the sense that like when people save today, quote unquote, save today, like they typically save in their 401k, which is likely just, you know, an index of the S&P 500 and maybe like government bonds and corporate bonds. Like that's basically probably what you're saving. So like today, most people, you know, don't necessarily like big government or big corporations, yet those people are also funding the big government and big corporations. And then we have Bitcoin and this SMB idea where it's like now we have an opportunity to save with Bitcoin, which doesn't necessarily fund a big government and big corporation. And then we also have to have the ability to now save in SMBs or effectively save and grow SMBs. So now we could save in Bitcoin and also grow businesses within our local community rather than growing big government and big corporations. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. You know, one thing, again, like America, we have states' rights. So having more local service providers is very meaningful. So, you know, during COVID, when the lockdowns happened and kind of global logistics halted almost for a certain point, that created a lot of ripple effects across many industries where cost of goods go up like crazy. Things are unavailable. So like the development of houses slowed down. Now we have like a multi-million shortage of houses. And you just, there's a lot of volatility. Like, so by having things produced and made locally and not, you know, pushing small businesses out by bringing big ones in.
In this frontier moment, Bobby is talking about how the rise of Amazon and Walmart has transformed retail, offering pretty incredible new convenience to consumers. Yet the future could potentially see the dominance of these giants challenged by new emerging technologies, maybe something like decentralized Nostr marketplaces. New technologies have the potential to revolutionize e-commerce by removing the middlemen, allowing local businesses direct access to consumers. This shift could democratize the retail landscape, empowering smaller sellers and offering consumers more diverse and personalized shopping experiences. Decentralized marketplaces stand to make commerce more transparent, secure, and community-oriented, potentially redistributing the retail power dynamic away from giants and more towards local entrepreneurs. This evolution in retail could foster a more connected and open global marketplace, emphasizing direct relationships between buyers and sellers. And now back to Bobby.
It allows for greater, not only cost benefits for the end consumer, but it allows more people locally to have jobs. And like one thing that kind of, it's great in some ways because, you know, Amazon and Walmart has made everyone's life like honestly so easy. Like, let's be honest, it's so great to just go there and buy whatever you want. Like, what a blessing. But at the same time, if there was like a way we could better allow and like foster the ability for small businesses to be open and to not have like when COVID happened, like we just shut them the shit down and like leave all these big stores open. Like, why, you know, like it's unfortunate. And it just makes you wonder, like, what's going on a deeper level? Like, we need to foster and encourage these small businesses to do well. And if you look at mergers and acquisitions of large corporations, where most of their growth comes from is via acquisitions. It's like what Instagram was bought for like $1 billion and now it makes like 10 billion a month or a week or something insane, you know? Same with YouTube, Google bought that. Most of Google's products were made on like those Fridays where it's like work on whatever you want. You know, it's from someone's idea. It's not from a corporation like saying, do this. So most ideas come from people. And by allowing small businesses to thrive and allowing capital to flow to what small businesses make the most value, we end up creating a better experience for all, not only for businesses, but for individuals as well.
Agreed. I guess that's what capitalism does. It creates better, you know, incentives and better products and services for everybody. And I think Bitcoin kind of makes capitalism work better by empowering the individual more than, you know, large entities.
Yeah.
Bobby, this has been pretty fun. Is there anything else that you want to touch on regarding SMBs or Bitcoin that you didn't mention?
No. I mean, if you're savvy with the internet, e-com businesses are a great place to go. I've worked with those for a very long time too, and they're a blast. That you can make a ton and create a ton of value there. So, you know, I would say explore e-commerce if you're not like a local business type person who might do those type pieces of work. But I'll just conclude with if you are a small business, check out Voltage. You can start accepting Bitcoin payments and using Bitcoin or if you're like middle market, we're made for enterprises, but we have like an affordable option for like smaller businesses to kind of get their feet wet. And then if you are listening and you own a small business or want to get going with a small business, Imprint Digital, the marketing agency that helps companies, my CEO and co-founder, Alex Wells, he runs a day-to-day, like I mentioned, but he'd be more than happy to help and I'll be happy to connect you guys with him. But yeah, those would be the two things. I'm just happy to help small businesses learn more about Bitcoin and how to use it, and on the vice versa. And Bitcoiners, you know, who come into this wealth, help them, you know, provide more value in their local economy and help them learn about the options that are out there. And hopefully it can make an impact on someone.
I like it. Yeah, Voltage is great. When I worked at Blockware, we integrated it into the Blockware marketplace. So it definitely helps you accept Bitcoin. But Bobby, this has been awesome. Where can people find you, learn more about you?
Yeah, I'm on X. My name is Bobby Shell. I'm active on LinkedIn too, always talking about Bitcoin on there, helping folks. And yeah, I'm on Nostr. You can find me on there. And those are probably the best spots. I have a website, bobbyshell.com. I don't really upkeep it too much, but X is where I definitely hang out. So I'd love to connect with anyone who wants to say hey.
Awesome. Thanks, Bobby. Enjoyed it.